You are listening to the Massive Report podcast.
Planning a vacation? How about sunny Riyadh, Saudi Arabia? I'm Brian Phillips. Welcome to the remote version of the Massive Report podcast. We don't have anything to talk about, so good night. Thanks for listening. Like and subscribe the Massport podcast if you would. And we thank our sponsor, Saucy Brewery. We'll be back there next week. The schedule with the crew with the Leagues Cup is so weird that we had trouble scheduling all being together at the same time. Congratulations to you, Bart, a new father. Just changed a blown-out diaper. Boy, I remember
you
those
know
days.
It.
You get over being squeamish real fast. Are you a squeamish person?
No, not particularly.
See, I am. And I was in the birthing room for both of my girls, my youngest daughters, and I was fine. And then you face the blowout diaper and you get through that with the gloves and everything. Of course, no, I didn't. But you get over a certain amount of that, don't you?
Yeah. It was sort of, you know, it's not like it was something that I was kind of looking forward to, but you just got to power through it. You don't
right.
really have too much of a choice. Don't
That's
have a
right.
You're getting too squeamish.
All right. So we started off the podcast mm-hmm. by talking about diapers. We're off to a great start.
Oh, yeah.
It's the mommy bloggers here. Murph is here and our old friend Ori Benatar. How are you, Ori?
I'm good. It's nice to be back. It's nice to hear Saucy Brewworks name again. If your brew works, why mm-hmm. not be saucy with it?
Yeah. Thank
that
you.
Back.
So you've been working at Channel 4. Everything going great over there?
Mm-hmm. Everything's great at Channel 4. Loving life at NBC4i.com. Go check it out. Okay. Shameless plug there. But yeah, no, it's been good over at good old Channel 4, year and a half there now, and still writing about crew soccer. I mean, of course,
nothing newsworthy going on in Columbus.
No, there's nothing
world.
Newsworthy. You know, we just have an election next week. We've got soccer news that's coming out, flying at our faces. Mm-hmm. So there's nothing happening.
Well, Ori, I'm glad you're here because I always look at you as a particular authority on how the international transfer market works. It gets kind of arcane in our, and we'll talk about this in a few moments, but in our American brains, we're used to the baseball trade deadline. This team sends that guy to that team, two guys come back, done. You know, maybe there's some money changing hands. But when we talk about soccer, it gets complicated, not only in terms of, you know, GAM and CAM and LAM, all that stuff that we have in MLS that's really hard to get your head around. But then you're bringing in players from other countries, and then there's green cards and all that kind of stuff. So we'll get to that here in a moment because it is important to what we're talking about. Murph, Lucas Alarcón waves goodbye on Monday and catches a flight out of the country, and that's it. I know there were rumblings over the weekend. How long has this thing been in the works?
I would say quietly and probably, I don't want to say optimistically because it wasn't as if the team was trying to push him out the door. But first of all, I think you should look at these two moves, the Lucas Alarcón move and the bringing in of Diego Rossi as – look at them together because that's kind of how they were constructed behind the scenes. If there was nobody to go get, if there wasn't a Diego Rossi, or as I put out on Twitter, there were two other players that the team was interested in, Lucas is still here. Possibly, depending on how things worked out, Lucas could still be here had things worked in a different way in terms of what players they were ended up getting. But you know, you needed a DP to bring in Rossi. You needed the money to make the transfer fee work and all that. So, there's been talk behind the scenes, I think, for a couple of weeks. As you mentioned, Brian, there were some reports out there about Lucas. And when those were brought to me, I was like, not a chance unless they receive a crazy fee, which it does not sound like they did, given that the press release and whatnot did not include any sort of mentioning of a club record fee, which was, of course, Zach Steffen going to Manchester City a few years ago. And that was promoted as historic and all that. From my understanding, this is probably in the range of 5 to 6 million, maybe a little more than 6 million. You have to remember, this isn't one of the state-owned Saudi clubs. So while there's still plenty of money there, it's not the teams that you've seen spending absurd amounts on some of the.
Wait a second. The state in Saudi Arabia owns some of the teams, but not all of it. Who owns the other teams? Ori?
That's a good question because we don't really know that. And, you know, where does your money come from in Saudi Arabia, you know, but for through the crown prince? So it may not be from the sovereign wealth fund, you get your money, you know, if you've got money through there as an oligarch, you've got at least some relationship, maybe actual genetic. Or otherwise, the MBN.
I know at least two deal. Of the clubs that are state owned. That's Al Nasser, which has, of course, Ronaldo and just signed Sadio Mane, and Al Ittihad, which will have Karim Benzema and N'Golo Kante next season. I mean, the Saudi League has had one of the most insane transfer windows I can recall for any one league in any one summer transfer window. They're just signing players left, right, and center, players from Europe in their prime. I mean, to bring in Sadio Mane 1 year after he was at Bayern Munich, after he spent all that time in Liverpool, now teaming up with Ronaldo's nuts. And then, you know, they can just throw a penny, basically, in terms of the Saudi type of money we've seen them spend and get Lucas Del Rey on to Al Fateh. It's going to be fascinating to see how the league goes next season over there.
Yeah, yeah. You can't watch it, though. And Murph, so how much of this was Lucas going, they're offering me X. I really want to play in Saudi Arabia. And how much of this was, look, we'd really like you to take this deal and leave. I mean, was it both of them excited about this? Was it like, well, okay. How did this go down?
Here's the way I would characterize it. I think there was the team realized there was an opportunity to sign a 25-year-old Diego Rossi a year or two removed from great numbers in MLS for a price that they were surprised, and I was told this, they were surprised how low it was to bring him back from Fenerbahce. But that meant figuring out a way to make that work financially, making it work under the league's rules in terms of the roster construction. So they also had an offer come in for Lucas, which I think is what kind of sparked the initial report. I think normally that would have been probably turned down and they would have, you know, kept Lucas. There was obviously no reason to, you know, it's not like he's slowed down this year, right? He's the team's leading goal scorer. He has 10 or he has 7 assists as well. So it just was kind of a perfect storm. And from my understanding, there were conversations with Lucas about this. He was happy in Columbus, but this was an opportunity. Look, he's won MLS Cup here. He did it in his first year. He's won awards here. He's kind of done most of the things a player can do in a league, and this is a different challenge. Now, would he have stayed and continued and, you know, pushed for MVP and things like that? I think he certainly would have been happy to do that, but I think he also recognizes the challenge. The team recognizes that he's 31. He's in the second to last year of his contract. From what I was told, he likely would not have been brought back after next season when he would have been 32. So this was a way to get some money in the door, which obviously they then flip for Rossi. So I think all in all, it works out for both sides. Remember, Lucas plays internationally for Armenia. So now travel-wise, it's not quite the trip to get there when they play. Though if he wants to go home to Argentina, it's certainly a longer flight. But, you know, I don't want to speak for Lucas because he hasn't spoken about the move yet. But I do know that he was, at least according to people with the crew, that he was on board with this. This wasn't a kind of force out situation.
Mm-hmm. I think Bart, were you? Right. I have to ask you, Bart. Mm-hmm. Were you as? Because of course, my first reaction in situations like this is to get really angry and passionate about it, because, you know, I'm looking at it as a supporter, and I know you do as well. So what was your reaction?
Yeah, I mean, you went through all the stages of grief and probably you know pretty quickly, except for that acceptance one. And I think that acceptance, you know, only reached that when the reports about Diego Rossi, you know, became looked like that they had some actual legs to him. But you know, infuriated. I'm a Newcastle fan. Newcastle also is owned by the Saudi Sovereign Wealth Fund. I said jokingly, like, now Saudi Arabia is ruining soccer, because it was, you know, you see this team that's made all these moves. It didn't make sense. And that's where we were scratching your heads, because they've made all these moves throughout the window, the summer window, getting guys like Gressel, Camacho, just earlier that morning. They announced that trade officially. And then suddenly to see Lucas, who is in the midst of his best season, who is the best player in MLS right now, coming into that game, you know, according to Who Scored, highest rated player in the league, is on track to, you know, probably have the best season of a Columbus Crew player ever. Close to it. I think he was on track to something in the ballpark of about 15, 16 goals and plus or minus 9 assists, which would be right up there with Guillermo Barrichello's MVP season in 08. So it was mind-boggling to see this. And then when the Rossi rumors, you started seeing those, started seeing some stuff, you know, in Turkey, suddenly it made it a little bit easier to stomach. But it was so against the MO of everything else that we'd seen with Bez and with this team. And I think, you know, fans were justifiably infuriated, because we have seen this team, although not this regime, part ways with some beloved players in this club in pretty unceremonious fashion. Even Guillermo, Frankie Hayduk. You can argue that Federico Higuain as well. Not in the middle of the season, in the middle of a playoff race. And the other thing is, I think that thumping of Club America later that night also had, you know, an impact of softening that blow. I think they probably would have mercy ruled them if Lucas had been playing. But it made that a little bit easier to swallow. But it was shocking when that news first came across, because I saw those reports and we all hand waved them away. And then suddenly there's Tom Bogert there saying that this thing's real. And boy, it was a gut punch.
And just to be clear, you named your baby son.
Not after Luca without an S, but, you know, it certainly... I was not too, he was, I, we, the news came across while we were on a walk. He was inconsolable. He was in his crew onesie, and then proceeded to nearly have a blowout in it.
What's his middle name?
It's a Z, Zhang, is his middle name.
Oh, I was hoping it was Guillermo. All right. No. So Ori, this leads me to believe that long term, beyond Lucas's age, and you know, 31 is getting a little old in international professional soccer circles, was any of this, as bizarre as it is to even think of it, was any of this Nazi going, ultimately how I built this team, he doesn't fit in? Is there any way that came into the thinking?
I'm unsure about that. I think because you saw Zelarayán kind of adapt to the system very well. And I think we've seen in his most recent performances for Armenia, where he really shined during that June international break, seeing him score a couple goals, get some assists, and Armenia won both of its matches, including one against Wales. So he's kind of proven himself that he can perform on a European international stage too, trying to get to the Euros. So I don't know if the system maybe played a factor in it. But again, Bartbring brought up a good point, you know, with seeing beloved stars kind of get traded away this season alone. You can see that Tim Bezbachenko in the front office is maybe not afraid to make those moves that initially, recency bias wise, are maybe not the most fan favorite. Started with Jonathan Mensah being traded to the San Jose Earthquakes. This is a guy who was beloved by the Columbus community, but you have to look at it also from maybe the business perspective, taking advantage of the peak of the worth of a transfer or a trade as a player maybe is getting older. Maybe that factors in too. You know, Lucas Zelrayan being 31, if they maybe had waited till the end of his contract or when he was 33 or 34, maybe they wouldn't have been able to capitalize on a higher transfer fee for him. So you have to look at it maybe from that business perspective. It obviously was shocking news. I couldn't believe it when it was announced because it just came out of nowhere. But it also, I think, puts it into perspective, at least in my opinion. I think he is the most talented player to ever play for the club. And to be able to do what he did in the, what, 3.5 seasons that he was in Columbus, you know, to bring a crowd of 1,500 people to its feet, to noise that you would never have expected from 1,500 people wearing masks in the middle of December when he scored that third goal in the MLS Cup, you know, to bring a trophy to the team, Campeones Cup, while, yeah, it's like a glorified friendly, it's still a trophy, it's something. But the goals he scored, the free kicks, the clutch moments, the finesse, the dribbling, he's an iconic Columbus Crew player. If you have a Mount Rushmore of Crew players, I think he's the first person you think of, in my opinion. So, but there's obviously a lot to unpack with the transfer. I see Pat's got something.
Yeah, I think, first of all, the age definitely played a part because, A, you have an option to get younger. And we know this team has a desire to do that under Wilfred Nancy, and they have now Camacho, obviously being 32 is different, but he is, you know, Wilfred Nancy guy, played with him for 2 years. We'll talk about him more in a minute. And Gressel a little bit older, 29, but those were kind of separate, you know, opportunities. But I also think the way that transfers work throughout the rest of the world really affects MLS timing-wise. And you've seen it before, and I think we'll see it more and more. And Bez kind of said this when I talked to him about the Lucas thing. Look, this is when most teams around the world make their moves, right? It's their offseason.
Right. And
so you have a bigger opportunity right now to capitalize on that than you do when it's the MLS offseason. And look, that certainly affects what you're doing. As Bart pointed out, this team's in a really good spot with a really good player. And, you know, if you're going to move on from that player middle of the season, you're either going to take a step back, which is kind of what everyone's expectation was, even though the Crew internally believed they could continue to score goals with the roster as it was. And, you know, maybe you saw some of that against Club America and what they can do with even without Lucas Zelrayan. But I think the fact that it was all kind of one big move that had to be broken up into two separate moves just shouldn't be ignored. I think people are going to really like Diego Rossi. I know we were talking, Brian, before, and you said you hadn't seen much of him. Look, he's a guy that he's not Lucas in terms of the way he plays. He can play wide. He can play as a nine. He can play as a withdrawn forward a little bit. I think the way that he liked the energy he brings and the pressing that he does will be more Cucho like than Lucas like. And they really like that part of Cucho's game. I think you can still play that fluid front three with Ramirez and Cucho. It'll look different. He's not the facilitator that Lucas is, but Lucas isn't your classic number 10 either. I mean, he's more of a goal scorer than a facilitator. He just also is able to do that. And I do think if you put Rossi in that role, maybe that, like we've seen with Cucho this year, maybe that can be brought out in him. But I mean, he's a guy who was the second youngest Golden Boot winner in MLS history. I was part of that Supporter Shield LAFC team that was so much fun to watch. And again, you're getting him in the prime of his career. And I think for pretty good value, if the numbers that have been put out there are to be accurate, somewhere in the 5 million range. And you know, the money will be DP money, but you're already paying DP money for Lucas. Mm-hmm. So you know, that kind of probably is about a wash for a guy who's 6 years younger.
Yeah. Ari, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I don't buy that, you know, Lucas wasn't a fit or anything like that. Again, he's having his best season with the team.
And I don't think they would say that. I don't think.
Yeah. No, I don't think anyone would. And I think I think, you know, if there was any, I don't think there may have been at some point, you know, maybe some consternation from Lucas. You know, there have been rumors, especially during the Caleb Porter era, of Lucas being unhappy, being played out of position. I don't think there was anything, you know, on the Lucas side with that. I think, again, this was probably the chance to, you know, get generational wealth if you're Lucas El Arayan from Saudi Arabia. And when you look at Diego Rossi and what he brings, I mean, he's one of the most exciting players in MLS for, you know, several years. You mentioned it. He's 16 goals the year prior, or 16 goals in 2020, I think 19 the year prior on that 19 team. He's a player who's had a lot of success around talented players in a talented front three. I think it's one of those moves too, because of his experience in MLS, where there's not going to be that big of an adjustment, which you would be looking at. I think in a lot of other cases, bringing in a player, even, you know, a talented player of that caliber, with his familiarity within MLS and what Wilfred Nancy allows those front three attackers to do, I think he's going to be able to chip in very quickly.
Yeah, and it's interesting because the other thing, you're just looking at it from a Diego Rossi perspective, I think this is a great opportunity for him to take a little bit more pressure of being the number one or number two primary goal scorer on the team. I still think Cucho Hernandez is primarily going to be the goal scorer on the crew, but I think Diego Rossi is going to have equally that amount of pressure as well as that expectation.
All right, well, the other end of this is Diego Rossi comes from the Turkish Super League to here. Why didn't his team want to keep him?
I mean, Fenerbahce is pretty stacked. They've got quite a bit of veteran talent, and they're pretty loaded at the striker spot. Aidan Dzeko is their captain, former Manchester City Inter Milan striker. Dusan Tadic is on their team. He used to play for Southampton. They've got a lot of other veteran strikers on that squad, I think, from, your former European clubs playing in Turkey. Fenerbahce, obviously a historic Turkish club. They've always been sort of in the top of the pecking order in that league, along with Galatasaray, you know, playing in Champions League every now and again. Robin van Persie even played at Fenerbahce after he was done with Manchester United. So Rossi had plenty of appearances for the team. He wasn't scoring a whole ton of goals. I think he had, you know, 6 goals in his loan season there, maybe 4. But I think he had 30 appearances plus in each of his 2 seasons in the Super League. LIG, that is spelled, by the way, for anyone listening at home. But what will be interesting to see, and you have to look at also the phase of Diego Rossi's career. He is about to probably most likely step into the role of being the primary goal scorer for the Uruguayan national team. Suarez is close to retirement, probably going to join up with Messi and Busquets and Alba and form the Barcelona, you know, oldies team down in Miami. You've got Edinson Cavani now at Boca Juniors. He's on his way out. He's pretty much going to be retiring soon. Obviously, Federico Valverde, probably the best Uruguayan player on that team. He's the star of Real Madrid, but he's a midfielder. So maybe Diego Rossi wants this challenge back in MLS, a league he's comfortable scoring in. He's proven that. So that way he can feel a little bit more, you know, have that ultra confidence for Uruguay. Next year we'll be playing in the Copa America in the United States and definitely need to have an improved World Cup in 2026 after getting knocked out in the group stage in Qatar. So that's an interesting factor too, thinking about Rossi coming to Columbus.
And the other thing is with similar with Cucho, you know, this is a player who playing in one of the higher leagues, but wasn't necessarily performing at that. But he's at an age where if he comes to MLS and he dominates, he's still a player that, you know, European teams could want to sign. And so he's a player that the crew could make money on. I think there's some sell on clauses potentially for Fenerbahce with this deal and some of the stuff I've seen reported.
What does that mean?
It would mean that if crew were to sell him to another team, a portion of that, the revenue that they coop from that would go back to Fenerbahce.
So is this common?
Somewhat. Yeah. For especially, you know, big transfers or transfers again, where they see that, you know, there's a good chance that this player may go. I wouldn't be surprised that there's something like that as well on Cucho's deal with the crew. But it's a good stage for him as well to really restart his career, show that he's got goal scoring prowess, and potentially, you know, there are going to be a lot more eyes on MLS too with Messi. I think it's a smart, savvy move for him too.
Are there a bunch of players around the world who, when they get transferred, there's like five clubs that need to be paid at this point?
Yeah, especially like it's if you get into like the Brazilian leagues, there's like not only do you have to pay the club, but there's like a person or a company that owns like X percent of said player.
And good then, Lord. You
know, yeah, it gets pretty complicated.
So get the Carfax is what you're saying.
Right.
Player has been.
Yes, I will say, Brian, to answer your question, looking back at Fenerbahce's lineups, the way they list them at least, it looks like he was playing more as a left winger than a forward or, you know, kind of a secondary forward. So I wonder, too, numbers-wise, if that was, you know, why you didn't see him be able to score. Now, you know, you're obviously you're upping the level in terms of the league that you're in, but I think those numbers look a little lower because he's not the guy in front, one of the guys in front of goal. I did think this was an interesting comparison. Andrew Wiebe from MLS Soccer tweeted about this move and said, imagine what Romel Kyoto did with Nancy last year in Montreal. Now imagine Rossi in that role with more help and quality around him. Kyoto in 30 games, 15 goals, 6 assists. I was going to respond to that tweet. Just imagine Lucas Celarayán because he was already on pace to do more than that. So I think you can see what a talented attacking player, and we've seen it all year, right? Even a guy like Christian Ramirez, who wasn't expected to be a big factor, you get into this system with this offense, which is geared to get numbers forward and create chances. If you can finish in front of goal, you're going to have those opportunities, and he certainly can. So I think fans are really going to like him. I really do. I know the Lucas news is tough. Believe me, when I first got wind of it right before it came out, my reaction was, what the bleep? And rightfully so, as you guys have all said, and I think you've said it well, one of, if not the best player to play for the club. But you know, if you look at kind of the moves that they've made, I think they are still in a good position to make a push. We were talking last week with Brett about, you know, maybe it's not the supporter shield just because Cincinnati's so far ahead, but this is a legitimate MLS Cup contending team with the talent on the roster. And I don't think that changes now. If they hadn't made a second move, I'd say they'd still, you know, get in the playoffs. You never know what happens. But with this, now the one thing, and I'm going to write this story here in the next couple of days after the window closes, they've made, just in this window alone, you brought in Rossi, Chaburco, who was brought in at the beginning of the window, Gressel, and Camacho. You've essentially reshaped, assuming those guys are all starters, half your starting lineup here. And if you go back to the start of the season, they've really reshaped what the lineup looks like. So you've got 11 MLS games to get everybody in, figure this all out. You also have 3 weeks here before, or a little under 3 weeks before you return to MLS play. But this is, it's not often that you see an MLS team change as much as the crew has here in the summer window and have success. You don't see them change that much just in general. So this is going to be kind of an experiment on where is too much. You know, if they can go on a run and push into the playoffs and make a deep run there, it's going to be an interesting case study for how that works. And if they don't, I think too that, okay, you did too much maybe during the summer window.
When is Rossi going to be here?
That's a good question. I know he hasn't been to Columbus yet from what I was told, but obviously they, you know, had to do the medical, had to do all that. I assume they did that overseas. I would imagine he gets in here pretty quick, you know, training early next week, probably. You know, you still have to get I think it's the P1 visa, but they want him, you know, they want him here. I think you probably, look, if you'd gone out and not been able to score any goals against Club America, maybe you don't feel as good about the offense without a player like Lucas or Rossi. But maybe they don't rush him quite as much because of that. And look, you're facing an MLS opponent on Friday and whatnot. But I think he's a guy they want to get on the field pretty quickly here. You don't spend that money and then just you know, slowly bring that guy in and you know, not let him take advantage of these last 11 games.
Yeah. So let's segue to Rudy Camacho, who, you know, in the before times, before Lucas left us, for about a day, I'm like, oh, good. Good. We are filling an area of need here. And I still feel that way. That's it, to have depth at that position that we didn't have before. That's a good thing. You made mention of Rudy Camacho's age. Ori, what do you know about this guy? Of course, he played for Nancy in Montreal.
Yeah, no, obviously, I think this is clearly, you know, Nancy has a player he liked from his previous job and he wanted to bring him on board because he knows he fits the system. I mean, you look at Camacho's stats for this season. He's already played 20 games for Montreal. According to trusty FUTMob, great soccer app, he's got a 7.06 average rating, which is pretty good for 20 games in there. You know, good passing rate, and I think that's important. 87% pass accuracy for Camacho. So obviously, the center back position, you're not maybe making the harder passes, but even still, that's not a bad number.
Well, a team that wants to play this way, though, that's
right.
Important. You know, we have to continue to work on cleaning up those cheap giveaways in front of our own goal. And a guy who's comfortable on the ball, that's a good thing.
Yes. So I think he's a good physical center back too. And now you,
how tall is he? Is he a big guy?
6'1", I think.
Because
so,
we need
decent size.
Yes,
yeah, 6'1", we need some size back there.
So you got to.
He looks thick too.
Yeah, no, he's going to be a beast, and yeah. He's next to another French player in Steven Moreira with a French manager. So you have a little bit of chemistry in there too. Mm-hmm. So I think that's going to potentially help out. But you get someone like Camacho with good physicality, Rossi, who's pretty quick, Julian Gressel, who's very versatile. He played very well against Club America, providing an assist in that game. So it's going to be it's going to be exciting to see this fully fledged lineup formed. It would be nice to see that first time maybe be in around a 16 game early next week if the Crew can get the job done against Minnesota. But if not, I think we probably would see it first and hell is real on August 20th.
The other thing I think it's almost a necessity if the Crew were going to sign a center back for it to be a guy like Camacho, that with how few games are left in the season, you need somebody who's got comfortable, not just comfortable playing the ball out the back, but that Wilfred Nancy is comfortable with and is comfortable within the system, because there are not exactly and there are very few plug and play center backs in this Wilfred Nancy system. So I think it's a really good business for the Crew, even, you know, with the guy who's 32 years old. This is a guy where it's win now. And I think it's a good business for the Crew to get, when everyone in the else, you know, could look at that and see, look, oh, where's the Crew's weakness? Center back. What's a really hard position to fill that? And I'm really surprised that it didn't take more really to bring him over, and that Montreal was willing, because what it was some GAM and then I think or some GAM or some TAM and then yeah. Maybe some additional GAM and TAM if they hit certain
might have been is there a roster spot thrown in that trade? I recall
maybe
potentially
I'm not sure, or there I think they acquired an international spot maybe earlier for some GAM.
Interestingly enough, they acquired an international spot from LAFC shortly before.
Didn't they have to pay, just speaking of weird things, didn't they have to pay some GAM to Atlanta as a finder's fee because Atlanta had like the discovery rights on Rossi? Just all the stupid stuff in MLS, man.
With all the MLS roster rules, Pat will get what I'm referencing. I think you guys here will get what I'm referencing. The Game Football Manager. This is why you never manage an MLS team. The roster rules are way too complicated. You would think Messi coming here would have fixed that.
It's why we hire a guy like Bez, who's one of the best in the business at finding the nooks and crannies of this. Look, yeah. This is essentially a rest of the season loan. Unless things work out really well, the intent here is, unlike with Gressel, who is also out of contract at the end of the season, but they intend to, you know, try and work out a deal beyond this year. This is to just, you know, get somebody in who can kind of help them get over the line. I think the ideal situation, and I say that somewhat hesitantly because I've been surprised how much Wilfred Nancy has used the Sean Zawatsky center back, especially the central center back position, which is where Camacho will play. So he seems to like him there. I think he's continuing to grow in that position. But I think the ideal back three now is Steven Marrera, maybe Sean Zawatsky as your right center back, Camacho as your central center back, and then Shaburko, who has only made cameo appearances off the bench, but someone I know that they have liked what they've gotten from him so far in practice as that left center back. That then frees up Malte Amundsen to go back to your left wing back, a guy who's more comfortable there than Yao Yeboah. You now also have competition at right wing back between Mohamed Farsi, who continues to be a bundle of energy and I think will get better and better, and Julian Gressel, who when we talked to him at the Meet the Team event last week was all about, you know, helping mentor a young player like Mo Farsi. So if that is, that's about as good as a back five, if everyone's healthy and you can get that chemistry going quickly, plus you have options with kind of the makeshift group that they've developed now. You know, Brian, we were talking last week with Brett. We kind of went through that lineup, Nancy guy, not Nancy guy. Well, it's weird because a few of those guys are gone now, but still, look, maybe even a stronger lineup if the center back, you know, if you're not giving up as many goals now because you've kind of solidified that back line a little bit, plus Patrick Schulte seems to just continue to be playing pretty much out of his mind. Now you have a essentially a number 10 who will do a lot more of the pressing that they want, maybe free Cucho up to do some different things. I still think this is a scary roster. I really do.
Yeah, well, I almost feel kind of guilty for complaining as much as I have the last few days over Lucas. I'm an emotional guy, and I love Lucas, as we all do.
You were not alone. And
that was tough, but I can see the forest for the trees here. I can see what they're doing. Hopefully it'll work. So I suppose, you know, it comes with the job with Tim Bezbijenko. In that position, you're just going to get ripped by the fans, and I don't think it bothers him at all. Obviously it doesn't, because he's like, this is what I need to do, this is what I'm going to do, and then they can complain, and that's okay. I guess that's why we're here. You know, I'm not complaining about Julian Gressel. We made many mentions of him. Coming off the bench the other night against Club America, you could immediately see the quality of this guy, Bart.
Yeah, his first, you know, first touch, one of the best crosses we've seen all season. Both Christian Ramirez and Cucho nearly on the end of it. And then he later assists on the Christian Ramirez goal. I mean, he's a player as well that has some familiarity, you know, played with Darlington Nagbe, has won MLS Cup, knows what it takes to win MLS Cup. And, you know, people, I had seen a lot of people saying, oh, he's, you know, best crosser in MLS when, you know, that kind of, you know, I know he's good. I remember from watching, but yeah, the service he provided in just that kind of limited time. It's like, yeah, you know what? Maybe that wasn't really hyperbole. And so to be able to, you know, bring that in a position, this is also a guy who in a pinch can play central midfield. He's been playing that, you know, position a little bit there for Montreal. Or I'm sorry, for Vancouver, the other Canadian team. I think, you know, that versatility, again, he's 29. So, you know, in his prime, not on the other side of 30. And I think, you know, in a win now mode, that's the sort of move you make. And the other thing is, you know, with Mo Farsi, I think has been terrific this year. I'd like to see Mo Farsi, frankly, you know, pushing and competing for that left wing back position. And I think he will with Malte Amundsen, because he's just been that good and because he's a gamer and competitor. But I think, what's been missing for Mo is that, you know, product in the final third and the attacking third. And I think being around a guy, you know, he's not going to become a pinpoint crosser like Julian Gressel just by virtue of being around him. I think some of that is God-given talent, and then a lot of it's a lot of work too. But I think there are a lot of other things that he can learn from being around him to really improve his game, improve his movement in the attacking third, and really put himself in a position to lock down that, you know, wing back position at right wing back in you know, in the near future, to push for it or to, you know, make himself valuable and you know, plant his flag there on the left side. So I think that was sort of my one is, you know, taking minutes away from Mo, who I think has been so good. But you see Julian Gressel immediately, and he seems really at home with the team already. I think, you know, part of that also credit to Christian Ramirez, who just immediately after he scores that, just runs straight to Julian Gressel like he was the one who just scored it. And I think a lot of credit does really belong to Christian Ramirez, who's a guy who just seems to have bought in, who seems to be kind of that glue player that all the other guys on the field love and is just always, you know, amping them all up. Always has a smile on his face, you know, kind of filling that Josh Williams role, as Josh Williams hasn't, you know, been in that lineup. And I think, you know, some credit belongs to him for, you know, one, finishing the ball, and then two, just kind of, you know, making Gressel feel like he's a huge part of this team right away.
Christian Ramirez also did a Dragon Ball Z celebration, which is what Lucas and Cucho's celebrations from, because Lucas is a huge Dragon Ball Z fan. I think that's one thing to quickly touch on is, and maybe something that you just can't, you know, it's part of the business of sports. You're losing a guy who is really well-liked in the locker room. And I think you saw that with Cucho's tweet, if you translated that. And yeah, I was told that by some fans that were there that when he got off the bus, now they walk through a group of fans outside the stadium. Cucho kept his sunglasses on and just like walked straight in, didn't shake hands. You know, clearly this is a guy who he is going to miss. And look, I don't want it to sound like this is going to affect him. Clearly it didn't in that game. He's not going to demand to be moved because Lucas is gone, but you are losing an important part of the locker room. Now there are other guys in the locker room who are very important too. So, but I think you saw that with the way that they kind of all wanted to pay tribute after those goals, on Monday night.
Of which there were many, Ori. And we saw after the match in the street, the opposing supporters burning crew flags. That's when you know that you've made an impression. That was a weird game. The first half, I don't know what their expected goals were, but I know they were more than ours. And that could have easily, you could have flip-flopped the score in this match. What was the difference between the first half and the second half beyond the fact that we scored all those goals?
It's tough to say. You know, sometimes that's just how those games go. I'm curious to see what the XG was. I'm looking it up and trying to figure out that statistic. I can't find it at the top of my head, but I don't know. I think the big momentum swing was Cucho scoring in the 41st minute. I mean, that's just such a difference maker, is being able to get one before halftime, especially when you're down. It can obviously swing a lot of momentum. It also helped that it was their first Leagues Cup game with like more than 15 people in the stands after what was going on in the St. Louis game at 12:30 in the morning. So I think you add some fan momentum in there. I think you add some motivated players. You know, it's tough to see a guy like Lucas and someone who's probably a friend to a lot of these guys, especially someone like Cucho, leave, but you maybe saw that extra motivation in there. I mean, offensively, they look great. Getting the penalty certainly opened things up. I think the fact they're able to get a third and a fourth is pretty remarkable. Mm-hmm. But it just goes to show, and especially in the central groups, and you could even say maybe a little bit in some of these other specified regions, maybe even the South region too in some sense, it's been overall pretty even between the MLS and the Mexican teams thus far. But the fact that you're seeing, you know, Club America lose to the Crew 4-1, and also Chivas Guadalajara, another historic Mexican club, they're out of the tournament because they didn't get the job done against, you know, either SKC or Cincinnati. So again, it's also just further proof MLS is right there with Liga MX. This knockout stage should be pretty exciting, but I did not see the crew winning 4-1. That's for sure.
No, certainly didn't. Look, two big things I took out of this. One, when the crew needs to play counterattacking soccer, something that hasn't happened very often under Wilfred Nancy, they can, and they can be very dangerous. Now, Brian, as you pointed out, if Club America finishes some of those chances or isn't called off sides multiple times on goals, then that game could have been very different. But the fact
an inch difference too, and Cucho puts them up in like 1-0 in like the 7th minute.
You're right. But the other thing for me is you moved Steven Moreira to the central center back position late in the game. And then in stoppage time, he is running into your penalty box to score the 4th goal. And I had to go back and just be like, why was he there? What is he? You know, I've seen it with the right center back, right? Or even Amundsen with the left center back. You know, you push those guys into kind of a midfield spot. And I get that. But the central set, you know, and you couldn't tell on TV, and I didn't see it in person who filled in. I assume someone did, but. Okay. This team and just the way that they throw these numbers forwards and different players are getting into different spots, you know, it's crazy. And that was just an example once again.
Steven set up that second one too.
Yeah.
That second goal, the go-ahead goal, was another Steven Moreira run where he beats two guys and then serves it to Cucho right on a plate.
Well, hopefully with, you know, more depth around, we can figure out how to get him loose more often, because we've certainly missed that part of his game because we've needed him for other things. And it just goes to show you that, you know, that's still in his toolbox, and he'll bring that tool out. And I'm sure that they weren't ready for it. Snapshot of this tournament so far, Ori, would you say that the teams from south of the border have been shocked by the level of competition they found up here?
I don't know about shocked. I mean, I think it's interesting. We do have to put the tournament into a big perspective. These MLS teams are coming in mid-season, developing some momentum. League MX teams, it's basically their preseason. But at the same time, we've seen some Liga MX teams really do very well to start this tournament. Atlas won both their games. Tigres looks great. Monterrey looks great. We all remember Monterrey from that amazing CONCACAF Champions League tie where Lucas got a BS yellow card. Toluca looks great. Mazatlan played very well. FC Juarez too. So, I mean, I would still say that the favorites to win this tournament outside of probably Inter Miami, who I would guess is probably the betting odds, as well as maybe a fan favorite to win the tournament, seeing how well Messi has played, and the GOAT, Robert Taylor, for Inter Miami. Tigres, I think, is still right in the mix. Remember, this is a club that's only a few years removed from making the final of the FIFA Club World Cup, losing to Bayern Munich. They're the only CONCACAF team ever to get that far in that competition in its history. Monterrey, I think, is right in the mix. You could see Pumas maybe make a decent run. Atlas, fresh off. They played in the Campeones Cup, I think, last year. So I think they kind of knew what to expect, the Liga MX teams. There's still plenty that are showing it. I think it's also worth mentioning Club León. They made the CONCACAF, I think, Champions League final this past season. They could play LAFC in the round of 16 in a little bit of a rematch. So, but thus far, I think the tournament's been a success. It's been fun to watch. There's been crazy games, crazy shootouts.
Well, I think it's interesting. You mentioned, you know, the juxtaposition of what we see usually in the Champions League, where MLS teams are just getting started, Liga MX teams are near the end of their season, so they're playing well. And you've seen MLS start to do better in that tournament as teams have focused on a little bit more. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, it's been dominated by Liga MX teams. So now you have this tournament where, okay, you're in the final third of the MLS season. Teams are really geared up, and the Liga MX teams are just getting started. So, look, I think overall the talent in Liga MX, there's no salary cap, right? All that stuff plays a part. It is greater than MLS. But I do think it's impressive, some of the MLS teams. Also, there have been a few, Brian, as you know, with the triple digit numbers on the back of the jerseys. Some of those teams haven't taken it as seriously. Some MLS teams haven't taken it all that seriously. So I think it's been, as we said last week, I think it's been more entertaining than we probably expected. And, you know, I think it does give you a little bit of a perspective that we haven't gotten from some of those Champions League runs that are so early in the MLS year.
Well, in this tournament, it's almost kind of a buzzkill when you're playing an MLS team. You know, I'd like to play another team from that league, and hopefully that'll happen. But we have Minnesota. We haven't seen them in a while, coming to lore.com on Friday at 8 o'clock.
Do you know who will be coming along with Minnesota, Brian?
Well, of course. It's our old friend Will Trapp.
Yep, yep. So look,
it'll be good to see Will.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be, yes, you're playing an MLS team, but you finally get to get Will back to Columbus, which I think is fun. I'm actually going to talk to Will on Wednesday. So
Another bit of fun trivia. I believe the last time, have the Crew played a regular season game against Minnesota in the last 2 years?
I don't believe so.
I don't think so.
I remember us playing in their stadium when it was new, but that was before the pandemic.
So I think the last time the Crew played Minnesota United was in the round of 16 of the MLS's back tournament.
Oh, I forgot. 2020
during COVID-19, and the Crew lost on penalties.
That's right. I forgot about that.
They did play one other time that same 2020 season.
That's right. They played here.
Yeah, the Crew won 2-1. Lucas scored. Lucas missed a penalty kick. Pedro scored, and Robin Lode scored for.
Yes, I remember that game. I remember that game. We were one of like two people there because there was only like 20 people allowed. Yeah. Crew Minnesota. They've got a knockout round history in the tournament. The one thing also with the Leagues Cup that I gotta just get out there is the fact that MLS. Really lucked out that we didn't have any crazy tiebreaker scenarios that had to play out where because with three team groups and only playing two games, there were so many possibilities that one of these groups could have ended up with each team winning a game. And then you have these ridiculous tiebreaker scenarios to figure out who gets out of there. And one team's going to be going home really peeved. Luckily, that situation didn't happen. All the groups, each team finished with different points. But I think for the future tournaments, maybe next year, maybe change it to four-team groups because three-team groups is not the way.
I think Minnesota, I agree with you, Ari. The format of this is ridiculous, but that's not a surprise when MLS is running things. This is a game the Crew should win. I think we should say that. We can say that comfortably. Minnesota hasn't been great this year. 7-7-8. They're in 10th place. In the Western Conference.
One off a playoff spot, though.
Yeah, but everyone makes the playoffs in MLS, so I don't know.
For if that, now.
Yeah, but, you know, it's funny. You talk about since 2020, the players have changed. That roster has – and the Crew roster, too, has changed quite a bit, I guess I should say. But leading scorer – I'm not even going to try and pronounce this name.
Bangakuli Hiugwane.
Yeah.
Bangakuli Hiugwane. Where's he from? He's from South Africa.
Yeah. 6 goals for your leading scorer. Then you've got Emmanuel Reynoso, who has 4. No one else more than 2. So I fully expect to, and I was talking today with Danny Higginbottom, who is calling the game, and we both agreed that Minnesota is likely to come in and sit back, try and make the Crew beat a kind of bunkered back line. And I think this team is, and I said this to Danny, I think this team is set up with the numbers that they get forward into the attack to handle that better than they generally have in the past. But I do think it'll still be a challenge. But the Crew should find a way to win. I think they're the better team. They're at home, even though home is not a word you're allowed to use in this competition for some reason.
One player that is coming, former Premier League star, Timu Pukki.
That's what I was going to say. I think he's got a goal in just a couple appearances so far. For Minnesota. And I believe Reynoso's been injured for much of the season. So they're getting, he's playing very well. I think he was, had a couple really strong games right before this tournament began.
And also had two goals and an assist against Puebla in their first League's Cup game.
So, this is a Minnesota team that, you know, is starting to piece things together themselves, but I think there's still a huge gap between them and Crew. And I think, you know, with the positive momentum you're feeling off that win against Club America, getting Rossi, even if he's not in the lineup there, I still pretty remember we were all singing Alex Matan's praises, you know, at the beginning of this year as you know, most improved player in MLS, a guy who could not, you know, you couldn't move from that front three. And I don't think it was really anything that he did that got himself out of the starting lineup. Just really the way that Christian Martinez or Ramirez has played. But I think he's, you know, Crew are in a really good position with him in that front three. And then as soon as Rossi's available, swap him out and put Rossi in, and you that XG just goes up, you know, probably 1.5. But
I thought Matson was good the other night.
I thought really he was really good. Sets up Mo Farsi on the penalty. I think he had a couple other times where he probably could have and should have pulled the trigger. Same could have been said about Yaya Boah. But I thought he played really strong.
Yeah, and look, one of the things I think that if Matan's to take that next step in his game, when he has space, he's really good. He can pick his head up and look around. But when he gets in, when you know he has one or two defenders, well, one or more than one defender around him, it becomes kind of put my head down, panic mode, which I think is normal for a lot of young players. And he just needs to be in those situations more. And I thought against Club America, he was more willing to kind of take on that challenge, beat guys one-on-one. He got out of a tough spot. So he just has to, and he's got good guys around him to kind of teach that. But I think that's the next thing. And then finding that ball that isn't the obvious. You know, he has had some very nice passes this year, but you know, if you're going to get to the level of a number 10 that the Crew want to be regularly playing, you have to be able to pick out a pass that other guys aren't seeing. And he's not quite to that level yet, I don't think.
Minnesota has had some trouble surrendering goals, 30 goals on the year, 26 scored, 30 surrendered. Dane St. Clair, the Canadian, is their main goalkeeper. Do we know anything about him, Ori?
Yeah, no, I believe he was Canada's number one during the Gold Cup.
Yep.
He's, I think, their number two behind Milan Borjan generally when it comes to Canadian men's national team. They have, like, all their first-choice players available. But St. Clair can have some really phenomenal games where he can just stand on his head. I think he'll have his work cut out for him on Friday in that game, being on the road and the Crew just being a team that can create a lot of chances and get a lot of shots off. So, I mean, I would say he's one of the top half, maybe even top 10 goalkeepers in Major League Soccer right now. He's definitely a really talented player. So he's going to have his work cut out for him on Friday. That's for sure.
Do we want to make our picks now?
We haven't predicted this tournament yet. So I say we stick with not predicting.
Oh,
and just
all right. Well, just so you know, I would have picked 4-1.
Can I predict?
Sure. Yeah, go ahead, Ori.
Ryan, what the hell? All right. Crew win in extra time.
Ooh.
Not on penalties.
There is no extra time. I guess it's knockout.
No, now there's extra time. You're right. Silly Murph. So there's definitely extra time. I think the Crew win 2-1 in extra time. I actually posted my full Leagues Cup bracket on Twitter, X, whatever the heck you want to call it. I am saying Tigres wins the whole tournament and beats Inter Miami in the final.
Oh.
And I think the Crew will lose in the round of 16 to Toluca just because what the heck.
Okay. But
the dream scenario.
How come we keep getting home games, by the way?
Well,
we won the group, so I think that's why.
Well, I mean, I'm talking about, like, why didn't we go to St. Louis, for instance? It seems like we've had a bit of an easier schedule than some other teams because we've had a wider gap between matches and we keep getting to play at home.
Yeah, they have had an advantage schedule-wise. I mean, you get an advantage as a league when you only are playing in your country, right? So these Mexicans.
Well, I realize that, but
seemed... I mean, the St. Louis game, it certainly could have been in St. Louis, and then you could have played Club America here. They definitely have gotten lucky there.
Okay. Well, just something I was thinking about.
Yeah.
Any other, Murph, any other things, injury, leg that we've forgotten about here, players that we need updated on?
The only other thing I had noted was that we saw the return of Kevin Molino.
Right.
At that time, yeah. I said to the people sitting next to me, I was like, well, maybe there's your Lucas replacement.
Like, summer.
Yeah. Look, I mean, it's good to see him back. It's been, you know, he was hurt and then he had some other issues and it's good to see him back. He just the speed that he once played with is just not there. He did have a couple nice dribbles in that game late, but yeah, I don't know if he can ever get back to a regular contributor at, you know, a high MLS level. But look, a super great guy. I hope he's able to finish the season healthy and maybe make a contribution on this team. Because he's definitely got the skill. I just don't know if he can do it consistently and with the speed that he used to do it because of, you know, so many injuries to knees, legs, and whatnot. But good to see him back out there.
Bam. Absolutely.
Yeah. At the time, I was like, well, you do have another number 10 that people speak to.
Well, all of a sudden, we look healthy and we're building in some depth onward and upward. It's Minnesota on Friday. And then we win the game. What's the timetable to play again? Does anybody know? It's too early, probably.
I think it would be a game either. So the round of 16 is scheduled to take place between Sunday and Tuesday. The game times would be announced after the end of the round of 32. And based on the timings, I would foresee the Crew would be playing a round of 16 game on Tuesday.
Oh, that's a quick turnaround.
Yeah, so now you're getting into pretty quick turnarounds. And I think if the Crew win, they probably would end up hosting again their round of 16 game. In terms of a quarterfinal, if they play Cincinnati in the quarterfinal, I have a feeling that game would end up at TQL. But the only other
seems inevitable,
yeah,
doesn't it?
That would be amazing. A Hell is Real quarterfinal in the league's cup. That would be awesome.
Yeah.
Even if they played the Fire or Club America or Nashville again, those are the only four teams they could play in the quarterfinal.
Okay.
I think against SKC or Toluca in the round of 16, it's still maybe not like a, you know, like a headliner type of match. But if you have a quarterfinal against former original MLS team, big rival, your in-state rival, the other yellow soccer team or the yellow Mexican soccer team that you just played and beat 4-1, it could be really exciting to see. But who knows? Knockout soccer, anything's possible.
And they are on the other side of the bracket from Miami, correct?
Yes. So if they faced Messi, they would face in the final.
Trip to Miami, guys. Podcast from Miami.
Yeah.
Fort Lauderdale podcast.
Yeah, first Messi appearance against a Crew team or in Columbus in a Leagues Cup final before MLS All-Star game.
Wow.
They would if Columbus was supposed to host that game,
they would give it
to Miami. Yeah, they'd move to Miami. They'd find
I mean, we know if Inter Miami makes the Leagues Cup final, Apple TV is going to do a 4-hour pregame show. Then they're going to have a 4-hour postgame show where three of those hours they're going to show all the celebrities that came to the game and like 2 minutes of the highlights of the game. And that's it.
Yeah.
Just one quick point. I just, you know, I'm on the MLSsoccer.com and it is transfer day, deadline day. And you think, oh, you know, hey, a guy who was a Golden Boot winner, that'd be like the big picture on the front page or just some graphic for it being deadline day. This is one of the biggest news days in MLS. No, of course it's messy. Everything messy.
Yeah, messy's play, but there's a weather delay.
I was going to say, you want to hear something funny is they're in a weather delay in that game, which is Orlando against Miami. So Apple TV is showing Messi against Atlanta.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, I saw on Twitter that our former SB Nation friends, the mainland, were tweeting that instead of playing Orlando's game in Orlando's last game in the Leagues Cup, they strangely decided to play the team that has the guy that they are helping to pay. So
Unbelievable.
Go figure. It's Messi's world. We just sort of live in it.
Yep.
Okay, a weather delay in Miami. I can't believe it. That's going to happen. You know, that's going to happen a lot.
Yep.
Because it's always happened down there. So
it always happens down here. I'm still.
Well, yeah, this is true, but it's
delayed for four
hours. It's even more in Miami. Yeah. All right. Well, let's wrap this up. We'll enjoy the game on Friday. We'll reassemble. And Ori, you know, come back anytime. The door's always open, right?
Of course. It's always great to be here. Nice to see you guys again and chat on the old Massive Report podcast. Of course, keep your brew work saucy at Saucy Brew Works. Obviously, I have to say that every time I'm on here.
Of course.
So
I hate you, Ori.
Like and subscribe. And Bart, next time we want to see Luca.
We'll see what we can do.
Bring him down to Saucy.
Oh, yeah.
Put him on the swing.
Yeah.
Murph, thank you as well. I'm Brian. Listen to my radio station, CD929. I'd appreciate it. Like and subscribe to the Massport podcast. And we'll talk to you at some point next week when we have some clarity as to when games are and so forth. At any rate, enjoy the game on Friday. And we'll talk to you sometime next week.